From our studios in downtown Portland, Oregon, this is a Coin6 digital exclusive.
So joining us today for our Writer's Block podcast, Amy Stewart. I was excited you could come in. Christina McMorris actually recommended you, a well-known author here. I guess not only here, but across the nation and the world right now with her books.
That's right.
And so when it was funny, when I looked you up, I was like, oh, she writes about plants and these very interesting books about plants. And then I found another Amy Stewart, I thought was another Amy Stewart, who wrote about these cop sisters and this, you know, fictional, these crime novels. And then I realized you were the same person that wrote both these genres. So I want to talk to you about all of that in your latest book. But I first want to start just with how you got started into all of this. I saw you grew up in Texas and you were an anthropology major at UT. You've been kind of all over the map. So when did the writing thing happen for you? When did that all start? It sounds like you must have been into plants at some point and gardening.
Well, I always wanted to be a writer. I mean, if you'd asked me when I was five what I wanted to be when I grow up, I would have said that I wanted to be a writer. You know, I was a very precocious reader, and but I didn't know how to do that. Like, you know, I didn't know how to make a living doing that. Right. And so I kind of gave up on being an English major at UT. I was just taking classes that were interesting to me, and I ended up, like you said, with an anthropology degree, just because you take one class after another and that's becomes what it is. So I had a job. I mean, I also went to grad school. I got a degree in urban planning. This is all kind of a long story of decisions people make when they're 20. But I had a job, and in my spare time, I was trying to write, and I had moved to Santa Cruz, California. And Santa Cruz is a place where anything grows and everything blooms. It's gorgeous. So I planted a garden for the first time in my 20s living in Santa Cruz. And so I wrote a memoir about my first garden in Santa Cruz. And that was my first book. And, you know, probably if I'd gotten into something else, if I'd been into, I don't know, knitting or cooking, or I would have written a book about that. I was mostly just wanting to write a book, but nothing else had happened to me yet.
So and you wanted to write about what you knew, I guess. And so you wrote a memoir about your garden. I mean, how does that, because I wouldn't think that is something you know, that someone could come up with however many pages, but it's, it sounds like it did pretty well. So what all did you talk about in that?
Yeah, it was just sort of the ups and downs of, you know, planting a garden for the first time. And everyone in my life was kind of a character in the book, you know, the neighbors and friends who came to town and
with advice and things. And then it led to, I saw you had several other books after that and about plants, and but they have very interesting titles. I wrote down one of them, Wicked Plants, the Weed That Killed Lincoln's Mother. So you found these like little hooks things with these books. So how did that idea come to be?
Well, you know, I go around and interview people. So my second book was about earthworms, because there had been a there had been a chapter about earthworms in From the Ground Up. And so then I wrote a book about earthworms, and that required going around and interviewing earthworm scientists all over the country. And so each book sort of leads to the next one. You know, someone says something to me and I think, oh, that's intriguing. So at some point, a botanist mentioned something to me about a poisonous plant, and I'm like, huh, right, yeah, there are, like, there's all these poisonous plants that are sort of famous because they've, a famous person died. Socrates was killed by a hemlock and so on and so forth. And I thought, well, it'd be interesting to tell those stories, like not what could kill a person, but what plants actually have killed someone, and who was that person, and what happened to them? I just found out yesterday that the Oregon Department of Corrections has banned wicked plants from the state prison libraries. So this is a, I've never been banned before.
And this is because they're worried inmates will get a hold of them and learn and how poison to, people? That's very interesting.
It's always an honor to be on a list of any kind.
You never knew your book might be assisting, you know, future criminals, or maybe maybe that crossed your mind. I don't know.
Well, my thing was always, you know, if I can't talk about these plants, then nobody can write a murder mystery, right? Because they're all about how to kill someone.
That is really interesting. And then the wicked plants led to the wicked bugs. Maybe that one is banned as well at the prison system.
It's a little harder to kill a person with a bug.
Although it sounds like you mentioned the lice, the louse bug, I guess carried some disease that did not, bode well for Napoleon's army? Is
that right? Yeah. Right. There are definitely a lot that transmit diseases, mm-hmm. but that seems like a complicated way to inflict harm
yes,
on someone.
A little harder.
Yeah. more involved.
But these books did really well, and the earthworm book that you mentioned, it won a big award. I read that and I was like, wow, a book about an earthworm. I mean, I feel like I do need to go back because I have a couple of your novels, uh-huh. but I need to go back and look at these books about plants because they look way more interesting than I would have thought they could.
Right. That's always the goal. You know, I go out and give a talk maybe at a science museum or a botanical garden or something like that. And my thing is always the husband test.
Yeah.
Somebody brings their husband along because my audiences tend to be a lot of women. I don't know why. But anyway, they bring their husband along and the husband comes up afterwards and go, you know, my wife really kind of dragged me to this thing, but it was really interesting. I was surprised. And I'm like, oh, thank you for not falling asleep during my talk.
That's hilarious.
It's like high praise.
Yeah. Well, you are big, it sounds like, in the gardening community and the plant world. You do give a lot of these talks.
Right.
Is that something that you realized would come out of writing those books?
It did. Yeah. My third book was called Flower Confidential, and it's about the global flower industry. Okay. And that was on NPR and, you know, in the New York Times, and CBS Sunday Morning did a segment and stuff like that. So that's when the phone starts ringing and people want you to come and talk about the book.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I know you have some sort of famous poisonous plant garden, too.
I used to.
Oh, okay. Was this in Eureka?
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
I used to live, before I moved to Portland, I lived in Eureka, California. Mm-hmm. And while I was working on Wicked Plants, I planted a garden of some of the plants I was writing about, because it's weird to write about a plant that you've never seen and sort of can't get access to. And these are not plants that you can just walk into a garden center and say, you know, I would like a dozen mandrakes, please. They don't have mandrake at the garden center, but people start offering them to me.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what am I going to do with these plants? So I did. I planted this really creepy, spooky garden with 30 or 40 species of poisonous plants, and there was like a skeleton in it, and you know, all kinds of stuff, tombstones instead of plant markers, and that kind of thing. So it was creepy and cool, but not really very practical,
right?
As a garden. So, so then I wrote a book about booze called The Drunken Botanist.
Oh yeah, how could I have forgotten this book?
Yes, which is sort of all the plants that we turn into alcohol.
Yeah,
and so I ripped out the poison garden and planted a cocktail garden,
which is
way more useful,
completely more useful.
Exactly.
Yes. Have you recreated that? Now, since then, you've moved to Portland.
Yes.
And have you recreated any of these gardens in your place here in Portland?
No, I live in a little condo now. So,
okay.
So somebody else is going to have to do that.
So let's talk about that, because you and your husband were in Eureka. You still own a bookstore there, a small bookstore. Was it around the time you made the change to move to Portland that you also made a change in what you were writing about?
No, I think I'd written the first two novels, probably. Okay. Maybe even the first three I wrote in Eureka. I think that's right.
And then you made the move to Portland.
Yeah,
so how did that change happen? Because here you are, and you're getting pretty well known writing about, you know, wicked plants and plants that make booze. And then it sounds like you stumbled upon some newspaper articles about this group of crime-fighting sisters from the 1800s. or they were born in the 1800s.
Well,
how did that kind of click in your head and made you think, I want to write something about these people?
Well, you know, it happens a lot when you're doing research that you're looking for one thing and you find something else,
right?
And you sort of got to set that aside and keep moving. You can't get too sidetracked with every little thing in a 100-year-old newspaper. But yeah, I found a newspaper article about Constance Kopp entirely by accident from 1914. She and her sisters were the victim of a crime. And so they sort of worked with the sheriff and fought back. And as a result, Constance was made deputy sheriff. Mm-hmm. And that's very unusual at that time. There were not a lot of women in law enforcement.
Right.
And there were, as far as I can tell, no women doing particularly what Constance was doing.
And she wasn't like a diminutive little, I mean, she was a big woman,
from what it
sounds like.
I mean, the newspapers say that she was 6 feet tall, weighed 180 pounds, which at that time, you have to remember, the average height of a man before World War I was 5'7", 5'8".
Imagine 6 feet.
Imagine looking down at every man you ever meet. I can't picture that, right?
Yeah,
I'm always looking up at people. But she would have towered over everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. I wouldn't mess with her. Yeah.
Right.
So true story. Then you find the stories of her and also her sisters. And so do you start then just finding more articles and more articles about their adventures and what they did?
Right. I mean, in those days where they lived, which is around Paterson and Hackensack, New Jersey, there were probably 7 daily newspapers. So everything ends up in the paper.
Right.
And the wire stories, every newspaper around the country, I mean, it's all like that. Every town has 5, 6, 10 local newspapers publishing not just once a day, but often twice a day. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're eager for stories. And so Constance's exploits as deputy sheriff would go out on the wires. And so I found things about her in the El Paso newspaper and actually out here in Oregon, you know, people were reading about her. So yeah, she was all over the country. So I could see right away that it would make a great novel and that it's not one novel, it's a bunch of novels because her life breaks out into these nice little episodic chunks. And you can sort of see like, oh, there's a book in that and there's a book in that.
Yeah. And while they are novels, it sounds like there are bits of truth, obviously, chunks of truth, because they're inspired about things that you actually read, but you do have to kind of make up the dialogue and imagine maybe what she would have said at the time.
Exactly. Yeah. They're as much as possible, they're based on what really happened. Mm-hmm. And the first 4 of them are about her years as deputy sheriff, and it's the real cases that she worked on. I have found out as much as I can about the women in the jail. She was the jail matron, so she was responsible for the female section of the jail. Mm-hmm. So all those women, like who was locked up and why and what was their story? So I've tried to figure as much of that out as possible and stick to what really happened.
Yeah, and it sounds like you were really drawn to her because people hadn't really heard of her in our time.
And, no one had. Yeah.
And also it was just so unique to have a woman in this position.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. There were women in law enforcement at that time. And in fact, Portland has a very famous early police woman, Lola Baldwin. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've ever run across her story around 1912. But a lot of the women at that time, including Lola Baldwin, were really more like social workers. Mm-hmm. They were there to help deal with the women and children who came through the system. And they were also there to kind of enforce morality codes, you know, to go to the dance halls and make sure that men and women weren't getting too close together and sort of monitor life on the streets and all that kind of stuff. Lola Baldwin did a lot of that in Portland. And so Constance was unusual because she was doing straight up law enforcement. She carried a gun. She had a badge. She had arrest authority, meaning the ability to put a criminal under arrest on the streets. And women weren't given that at the time. So she was really unique in that way.
Yeah. Wow. So the newest book, which hasn't even come out yet, it comes out in September.
Yes.
This is about them preparing to go off to World War I. They discovered they could do this preparation type thing before.
Yeah. I'm going to write 2 novels about them set during World War I. And I know very little about what they actually were doing during that time. I know more after the war. I pick them up again. But during this time, I've only got 1 or 2 sentences to give me any clue. So there's a lot more fiction here. Yeah. But I thought, well, okay, what were women doing? What can I have them do that's typical for World War I? And there were these military style training camps for women who wanted to serve in the war. Mm-hmm. This was extraordinary. And you can imagine this sort of the wives of the generals going to the War Department saying, we want a role too. And you can imagine the response they got. It was sort of like, well, you're going to be home cooking and cleaning and that's enough. And thank you for that. And they're like, no, we want to do this. So the women had to set up these camps on their own. There was no support from the Army or the Navy. But eventually the military had to get on board because hundreds of thousands of women expressed an interest in some kind of wartime service. Mm-hmm. So I'm sending them to one of those camps because I have great documentation of what went on at those camps. I know what they ate for breakfast. Mm-hmm. I know what the training exercises were like, everything. So I'm able to tell the true story of the camps, even though the cop sisters weren't really there, as far as I know.
Yeah. And so you have another one coming out then after this?
After this, I'll have another wartime.
Okay.
Wartime
is that
book.
Written yet?
I'm working on it right now.
Right now. Okay.
Yeah, it's
and
close.
And then I read that Amazon is working on something with the cop sisters. Is
Yeah. They're working on a TV series.
Based on your novels?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Wow.
So that's in development. We'll see what happens.
Yeah. So what does that mean if it's in development? Does that mean it's gotten past so many stages? Because I know a lot of writers have brushes with this.
And yes. Then, yeah. Right. There are many stages. I mean, it's been optioned since the first one came out several years ago. But they made this deal. It's Elizabeth Banks Production Company.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Wow. That's cool.
Yeah.
And so they've made a deal with Amazon to develop it. And so I think they're in the stage of writing the pilot right now.
Huh. That means Elizabeth Banks has read all of the Cop Sisters.
I don't know. Yeah. I think she's doing kind of like what Reese Witherspoon is doing and trying to get more women-centered projects made. So that's the focus of the production company, but she's pretty busy. So I'm not, I can't say for certain how many of the books
she's
written.
She has some downtime in her trailer probably, and that, you know, when she's on set or whatever.
Exactly.
So, and so then do you know what's next for you after you write that second novel? Or are you just going to keep doing the, you say you have so much material.
I do. Yeah. So hopefully, you know, it's if people keep reading them, I get to keep writing them.
Yeah.
So hopefully there will be many more to come, because the 1920s, it gets very interesting again for the Cop Sisters. Mm. And all three of them get involved in crime fighting and detective work and law enforcement in different ways.
Yeah.
So there's a lot more to come.
Have you spoken with, do they have any family alive today that you've been able to find?
Yeah, they do.
Yeah.
That's been the amazing thing, is even the minor characters in these books, I've tracked down family members.
Really?
Yeah. So I do. I have met some descendants. The youngest sister, Florette, is quite a bit younger than the other two. And she had a son later in life. Mm-hmm. So he's still alive. So
oh my gosh.
Yeah. So I've actually spoken to the son of one of the three sisters. And he remembers another one of the sisters.
Oh, wow.
Who he met when he was a little boy.
So I bet they love these books.
They've been really good about it. You can imagine how weird it would be if some stranger called you up and said, I'm writing a novel about your great aunt or your mom or your grandmother.
Yeah.
So they've been really kind and generous, and they've read the books and they've shared what they know. And I've given them a lot too. Like I have built out their family tree in a crazy detailed way that they didn't have.
Yeah.
So I'm like, here's your great, great grandparents' marriage license.
Yeah.
And,
oh, wow.
So that's cool to have.
That is pretty cool. Yeah. And then again, you are living in Portland, and you said your husband's opening up an exclusive bookstore that will be like appointment only in the northwest part of Portland pretty soon.
Yeah.
That's fun.
It is fun. Yeah. He's a rare book dealer. So he's starting up a little shop down the street from where we live.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Amy Stewart, thank you so much for coming in today. We appreciate it. And I can't wait to read. You sent me two of your books. So I've already started one, and I'm excited to read both of them. I should actually go back probably and read the whole series, I'm thinking.
There you go.
Just so, you know, just like a TV series. You got to be, you know, that way you know everything.
You can catch up.
Yeah. Thank you again.
Thank you.
Yeah.
The Coin 6 Podcast Network is your home for all sorts of content you can't find anywhere else. Visit coin.com/coinpodcast to see our entire library. And you can always subscribe to all of the Coin 6 Podcast on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.